It's now time for the MLB.com Cut Forecast. Cut Forecast. The Cut Forecast. It's a cast. From Cut Four. Here it is.
Hello and welcome to the Cut Forecast. I'm Dakota Gardner. I'm joined, as always, by Gemma Kaneko.
What's up?
What's up with you?
Oh, you know, it's 90,000 degrees outside, so
yeah.
I'm happy. As we've discussed, I'm like a lizard. I like to lie around in the sun.
It is horrible. This is my least favorite weather of the year. But as hot as it is here in New York City, you know where else it's hot? Beautiful, sunny Austin, Texas. And our beautiful, sunny Austin, Texas correspondent is here, Christopher Landers. He's both beautiful and sunny in his disposition. Hello, Chris.
It's true. I match the weather. Hello.
How are you?
Aw, that was such a nice Pretty thing
good.
To say, Dakota.
Well, thanks.
Yeah, it was. I'm a little suspicious now, but I'll take it.
No, no. I'm not allowed to say something nice to my coworker?
It's confusing, frankly.
You know what? I am insulted. We have a lot to get to today, and we don't have a ton of time to get to it, so we will get to it. We'll talk a little bit about Nelson Cruz and a fake mound charge. What? Tori Hunter once played catch with a small child. Who that child grew up to be might surprise you. Also, we'll talk a little bit about baby gender reveals and the how they intersect with baseball. God only knows how that is. And then we will bring it on home with Christopher Landers' post about ranking every perfect game ever. We have him here, so we will talk to him about his methodology and why he is wrong. But before we get to all of that, Carlos Beltran and his teammates held a funeral for his glove. As you know, he's played mostly at the DH this year in Houston, so his teammates got together and held a funeral for his glove because he doesn't use it very much. He hasn't played the outfield since May. According to MLB.com's Brian McTaggart, the ceremony took place in center field. Springer and McCann were there as well. McTaggart said, quote, Springer took three foam headstones to center field before batting practice. The team later crowded around and McCann walked from the warning track wearing a robe. You can go see all the photos of this on MLB.com. It is the goofiest thing I've ever seen. Beltran said, I love it. I have fun with them. They have fun with me, referring to his teammates. That's what a team should be. They made me laugh. That's huge. Wasn't Aww. This amazing?
Yeah, that was really sweet. It was a very strange, delightful event that also, I mean, the glove had to get resurrected.
Yeah.
Already. Like, today.
Yeah, literally today.
Yeah, that's just a few minutes ago.
Yeah, that's an interesting postscript. He began the game today. We're recording this on Wednesday, the game against the Mariners, by making a running catch. So he resurrected it, and it is as good as ever.
Truly, though, I think I wish more teams would do things like this.
Like having funerals?
That didn't have to be a funeral, just, you know, a fun, strange
Which
event.
Which objects would you like to see ceremonies based around?
I guess it does depend on what is going on. It does help, you know, when you're in first place in your division and, you know.
And prohibitive World Series favorites.
Yeah, you have to have that kind of looseness if you're going to be wearing robes that you found someplace and acquiring, like, foam headstones. Which I guess we did see the Cubs do stuff like this last year, so... Yes.
It's
true.
Maybe that's the secret to World Series magic. And as we all know, the Sports Illustrated has already told us that they're going to win. They leaked that out. So, Chris, do you support glove funerals in the American League?
Yeah, absolutely. Truthfully, I'm just impressed at Carlos Beltran's ability to laugh at himself. I feel like it's a really admirable thing. You know, like, I mean, once upon a time, Carlos Beltran was... Like, you know, like a five-tool player. He played center field. He was great at it. He was running all over the place. And now, in his dotage, he's still able to let the youths poke fun at him a little bit. We should all aspire to age as Carlos Beltran has aged, is what I'm saying.
Well, I think if you've had the career that he had, you also are probably more willing to laugh
That's
at yourself
true.
Toward
yeah.
the end.
Yeah. If
like,
I were a Hall of Famer, I would also be humbled.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
That dude's one of the all-time great postseason hitters. He has like, just great memories in... like half a dozen teams. Like, he's a great player who is destined for the Hall of Fame, so I think it's easier to laugh at your declining glove. Although, not today.
He made the catch.
Yeah.
He made a catch.
It, apparently.
He
came back from the dead. Good as ever.
Gemma, if we were going to hold a funeral for an object of yours, what would it be?
What part of my life is totally over now? Yes. That's what you're asking me? That seems kind of sad. I don't know that I really necessarily want to foreclose on anything that
I've done.
Do you have one?
Yeah, I would bury an old play, like an old script from a play, because I don't do theater anymore.
That's sad.
That's not sad. Maybe sad for you because
it's
you.
Like a dark turn on the cutboard.
I still do theater.
Gemma still does theater and had a play that was reviewed in the New York Times. We don't have to
talk
about it.
I don't know why you do this. You always have to bring up things that I don't want to talk about on the podcast. It's
we don't have to go in depth. It's very cool. It is very
anyway.
Cool. Chris, what would you bury?
Oh boy, I'm going to side with Gemma here. I don't know. Maybe this is just denial, but I'd like to think that, you know, I'm still relatively young. I still have most of my life ahead of me. Nothing is final yet.
You guys are no fun.
I guess I would. I mean,
there's no fun, and then below that, there's negative fun. You guys are negative.
I think you're negative fun because you just asked us to bury our dreams when we're still in our 20s. So
how did we get pigeonholed as the not fun ones here?
If anyone is not fun,
whatever. You guys don't want to play my game. That's fine. Let's move on to somebody who does understand fun, and that is Nelson Cruz. From 2009 to 2013, Nelson Cruz and Derek Holland were teammates at the Rangers. I don't know if you remember that. It's lovely times in Texas. But on Sunday, Cruz's Mariners defeated Holland's White Sox 7-6, and he pretended to charge the mound on Holland briefly before turning and taking his base, as a player does. We've seen a couple of fake mound charges over the years. Obviously, Eric Thames did one recently in Korea before he became MLB superstar Eric Thames.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys have thoughts on the appropriateness of the fake mound charge?
Well, I remember when Eric Thames, when we found the video of Eric Thames doing this, that it was just like we had a big discussion about how, if or when this could work. And we were like, oh, it seems like it'd be really hard to do in actual MLB because everyone takes everything so seriously. So I'm very glad that Nelson Cruz found a way to make this joke work because it's a good joke.
It's the ex-teammate factor. That's the key.
Ex-teammate friend, too. I assume that they are friendly still.
Yeah, Chris, what did you think about this?
Yeah, it's sort of tough to advocate for this catching on as a trend because I feel like it sort of requires that both people be in on the joke to some extent, so they have to have, like, a past relationship like Cruz and Holland did. But I'm all for it. I think it was just a couple weeks ago, another fake mound charging incident happened in the KBO, and they, like, hugged, and everyone was great and happy. And I feel like it would go a long way to, like, diffusing normal tensions that happen during a game.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if people are willing to, like, laugh off getting hit and just, like, show that everyone's on the joke, then, like, when tensions actually start rising, maybe people will be more likely to laugh it off. I don't know. I feel like it could go a long way towards conflict resolution.
I wish this had ended in a hug if Nelson Cruz had, like, gone a little bit more forward with the charge and then was like, jokes, it's time for a hug.
That's a tough, because the closer you get for the hug, the less of a joke it might seem.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at Holland's face, he seems genuinely concerned for a little bit because Nelson Cruz is, like, a very
large person.
And he sold it really well.
Who are the, like, top five dudes who you would not want to have charge the mound if you were a pitcher?
I mean,
Judge.
I feel like Aaron Judge has to be
Judge
Stanton.
Even if he were even if he was doing it with a smile on his face, I would be scared.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Stanton is definitely on the list.
Well, it's like how Mike Clare said that one time Mike Trout, like, tapped him gently and he flinched because Mike Trout is just, like, compared to Clare, like, just a built guy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it could be anyone. It could be, like, it could be, like, a 5'8" Ronald Torres or whatever, and I'd be like... like, I'd be anxious.
I'm sure all
they're
of them.
Athletes.
I would be all of them.
And, yeah.
But,
yeah.
Just...
And if I was a pitcher, I'd be like, I can't throw a punch in my hands. You know?
my career.
Did you, like, revert into being a Southern Belle during this experience?
Yes, exactly. That's what would happen. I would get out a fan that I'd had in my back pocket the whole time and start fanning myself.
Lord.
Well, yes. I say.
Also, on Tuesday in the Red Sox-Blue Jays game, Troy Tulowitzki hit a wall ball, what would ordinarily be a double at Fenway Park, but Andrew Benintendi pretended to throw the ball in, and I guess Tulowitzki believed him and stayed at first, inexplicably. Benintendi is just that good of an actor, I suppose. Gemma, maybe he can be in your next play.
Yeah, I'll give him a call. Have my people call his people.
Which is a better fake thing? Is it the fake throwback into the infield or the fake charge of the mound? Chris, what do you think?
So I want to give Nelson Cruz credit for selling it better. I think he gets the Oscar if we were handing one out. Mm-hmm. But I do respect, like, the sheer gumption it took for Andrew Benintendi to fake having the ball while the ball was rolling on the ground in front of him. Like, it was clear for everyone on the field to see that he, in fact, did not have the ball. But he still, like, really stuck with it anyway.
Yeah, this was
so
the ultimate.
So I feel like that has to be the more impressive feat of the two, and it worked somehow.
Yeah, this was the ultimate Hail Mary play. Like, he was like, well, I'm not getting that ball. So, sure, I'll try this. And then it worked, like Hail Marys do very, very, very rarely. I think Red Sox fans might hope that such a thing would happen in a more high-leverage game. But, hey, you know what? It's all good. It happens. I also think Andrew Benintendi, one of the most fun names to say.
It is a fun name to say.
That's true. It kind of got a good rhythm to it.
I also agree with Landers is that I think this is the Benintendi play was a better fake, ultimately, even though Nelson Cruz might have sold it better because it had real-life results, right?
Yeah.
Because Tulo didn't get the double, whereas the only thing we didn't get to see was that Derek Holland and Nelson Cruz didn't hug each other. But it's not like it started something or like it had a result or an effect on the actual gameplay, you know?
Jose Altuve, another fun name to say.
We're just sitting there like thinking
I am.
About it.
Yes, I am. Red Sox have a few. The Red Sox have a lot of them. Xander Bogaerts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Betts. Even Jackie Bradley Jr. is fun to say. Yeah. It kind of like rolls off the tongue.
This is the.
Did we just turn into a Red Sox podcast?
Just turn into. Just turn into.
I do like to say Jose Altuve. That's a really
it's fun. It's fun to say.
Yeah.
Inciarte. Another good one. Okay, we don't need to hear me say MLB player
names. Tune into our podcast. Dakota just says every MLB player name.
Not all of them. Some of them are not fun to say. I will not.
Names. Rude.
Okay, let's move on though. I teased this earlier. Torii Hunter once played catch with a kid in the stands. This was in 1997. He was a minor leaguer for the New Britain Rock Cats. And he was introduced to this child and was like, hey, I'm gonna play catch with this kid. That'll be cool. Little did he know at the time that kid would grow up to be George Springer.
Gasp.
And lest you think that this is some weird sports writer created narrative, this is a real thing that had a real effect on Springer's life. Here's a quote from Springer. I was just there one day and he was out on the field and he threw me a ball and I threw it back and we just kind of kept playing catch. I'll never forget that. He didn't have to do it and he did it. It stuck with me. He changed my life and I was only 8 years old. He's also talked about how he like wanted to emulate Hunter's career and how much he liked how he played. So literally this was like a key moment in baseball history. This is like you know how in like Back to the Future it all goes back to that day in 1955? That's what this is, but for baseball.
For all of baseball.
Think about it. I mean, if the Astros win the World Series, this Torii Hunter will have essentially won the Astros the World Series.
Yeah, they should get him a ring.
Yeah.
They should give him a ring.
I think they should. They definitely should. I don't know. I'm charmed by stories.
I know. I think that's really, really sweet. And so rarely, I mean, a lot of the times you don't see that kind of like connection. You don't. So all these major leaguers who are playing catch with kids in stands now, because it's kind of a trend lately, basically we should just follow all those kids for the rest of their careers.
I was going to say, I want to now scout out Bat Boys and fans.
Yeah, we should also like subsidize this. Like a smart team, like the Rays, like the team that does the extra 2%, right? They'll then encourage their players to play catch with more kids, because then they'll create more ball players. Bring in those kids into the organization. They'll have that.
So what you're saying
Springer.
is that the Rays should track down that kid that Max Scherzer played catch with like 2.5 years ago, and like what's that kid up to?
Probably
now?
Selling 97.
They should just
now.
Preemptively sign him.
Yeah, some smart team will do this.
Yeah,
some smart team.
Front offices, Dakota is available.
Yeah, we provide front office help. We also help any prospective TV networks looking for content. We can help you there.
We should investigate this a little bit. Have either of you ever played catch with any kind of professional baseball player on any level of professional ball?
No.
I have not played catch, no.
And none of us are baseball
players.
None of us
are baseball
players.
Yeah,
right.
There you
great.
Go.
I think that proves it. I mean, just conclusively, that proves it. Related to this, in 1998, a young man strode out to the diamond standing next to future Hall of Famer Derek Jeter at Yankee Stadium. His team had just won the Little League World Series, the Toms River, New Jersey team. That young man would grow up to be Todd Frazier.
Legasp.
And guess what? Todd Frazier was just traded to the Yankees. Obviously, Jeter's retired now, so they're not going to stride to the field again together. But although they did in 2014 for Jeter's last All-Star game. But I guess, which do you think is the more, like, unusual thing? Or, like, what is the more surprising? I don't know. It's weird that, like, this all kind of happened in a week that we heard about all these things. I don't know. It seems like there's some cosmic force at play.
Well, I mean, I feel like the Torii Hunter, George Springer story to me is like, the reason that it's so sweet is because it's not really like documented at all. It's just something that's stuck in George Springer's mind for a really long time. Torii Hunter was a minor leaguer at the time. So there wasn't even this aspect of like, oh, you're like, this is something that always happens. Like little league teams do take the field with the Yankees or whatever their local teams are. This is like a thing that happens. And so we have photos. We have like a photo of Derek Jeter and little Todd Frazier next to each other.
Go check it out at MLB.com. It's adorable.
And it's cute. But it's like very sweet, and I think that's also really amazing. It just, to me, lacks the same emotional, like, instinctive awe that I get when I hear the George Springer story, because it's just a personal thing to him and Torii Hunter until they decided to, like, talk about it, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, in terms of cosmic coincidence, I mean, Todd Frazier was on the field at Yankee Stadium because he'd already established that he was very good at baseball. But Torii Hunter, for all he knew, was just having a catch with a kid at a minor league game. You know, there are many, many kids at minor league games all the time. And the fact that this one happened to be George Springer and grow up to be one of the best players in baseball is like an impossibly small odd.
Yeah, it's very eerie. The whole thing is very eerie. These kids like recircling back into the MLB orbit. I find it all very, very crazy. Although I will say this, Todd Frazier, now a Yankee. We have Yankees fan Chris
on the
line. I bet he's
really psyched.
What do you think, Chris? Are you excited about Todd Frazier?
I am excited about Todd Frazier. I will miss Blake Rutherford. I had grown attached to him in a very short time, in, I guess, the year or so since we drafted him. But Todd Frazier, also from the great state of New Jersey, which I am also from. So as a fellow New Jerseyan, welcome the Todd father to Yankee Stadium.
How, on a scale from 1 to 10, how much would you say you like Todd Frazier?
One of my earliest baseball memories is watching him in the Little League World Series. We were like very attached to that Tom's River team, because I was also a New Jersey Little Leaguer. So I would say at least a 12 on a scale of 1 to 10.
Well,
I have long held a place in my heart for Todd Frazier.
Well, it's interesting that you say that, because he's totally available via trade in our fantasy league if you would like to acquire him. I
have not yet responded, so let me officially respond now and say I'm going to decline your trade offer.
This was the whole thing. Dakota was just setting this up. This entire conversation was just so we could bring that
podcast
up.
Podcast.
Yeah, the whole podcast. For you, just a long game to get you to trade for Todd.
That's been the goal this whole time.
Well, Landers, if you want to make a push for first, we can talk.
Yeah, I'm much more inclined to trade with Gemma, I will say.
I have some pitchers.
Well, before we move on, we want to take a minute to tell you about the MLB Pipeline podcast, which focuses on all things draft and prospect related. MLB Pipeline's draft and prospect gurus Jim Callis and Jonathan Mayo join Tim McMaster each week to talk about what's going on in the galaxy of MLB's future stars. You like that? Galaxy of stars.
Good.
It's good. Last week's episode featured a recap of what we learned about top prospects in the futures game and some analysis of late draft signees, including Hunter Green. Search for MLB Pipeline in iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. Go to iTunes, type in MLB Pipeline, click search, scroll to where it says subscribe, click subscribe, set your download settings so it automatically downloads whenever you're on Wi-Fi while you're sleeping so you can wake up to the MLB Pipeline podcast. All right, let's talk about another trend. In addition to baseball players playing catch with children, in addition to people pretending to attack their former teammates viciously, I am talking, of course, about the baseball-themed baby gender reveal party? Is this a party?
Sometimes it is a party.
Sort of a party.
Yeah, I think party is a fair term. Okay. There are a bunch of people involved.
We'll talk about the one that we most prominently saw this week on MLB.com/cut4. Kyle Tate, who is a sports broadcaster in Atlanta, planned to hit a ball that his wife, Megan, threw And when his bat hit the ball, it was supposed to explode into a colored powder that would indicate whether it would be a boy.
You could have seen this. Freddie Freeman did this a while ago.
Yes.
Effectively, so you can see Freddie Freeman do
how it was supposed to go.
Yes, he did it correctly.
Unfortunately, either the pitch wasn't great, or the way I saw, Kyle was maybe a little choosy with his strike zone. At any rate, he checked his swing inexplicably. The ball hit the ground and exploded into a puff of, I believe, pink smoke, indicating that it was a girl. What are your thoughts on this trend, aside from the fact that gender is a spectrum, not a binary? Gemma, what do you think?
Yeah, I will not comment on my general feeling on gender reveal parties overall. Why bother? But I guess this is cute, though I do kind of get why he checked his swing, because his wife threw the pitch and it looked like she was standing like a little close, and he was maybe afraid that she was gonna get hit with a comeback or something.
Yeah, that
like
that
I know it's supposed to
well.
Explode, but it still is like made of something, right? So like the ball fragments might have hit her or something, and I could see being anxious about that if I was hitting, you know.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, it seemed like he checked up because when his wife tossed the ball, she was still standing in front of him, and he didn't really know what was going to happen and didn't want to take a chance. But and this, I felt validated because this trend has sort of spread this year, and I've always been nervous about them because it seems like so many different things could go wrong during this process. And lo and behold, something actually went wrong. Like, I don't know. This seems like a high wire act.
I mean, it's like a cute idea. I guess.
And, oh yeah, no, of yeah. course. I mean, yeah, absolutely.
You seem like you have thoughts, Dakota.
I'm more just concerned for everyone involved.
I don't have thoughts. I think I like the idea. We've talked about this before, about baseballs exploding and having a surprise inside.
Yeah. We've talked about that, like, if Giancarlo Stanton hits a really hard home run, then it explodes into Kit Kats for all the people below.
Like, I kind of wish that it was just, like, you swung and the ball exploded and it announced that you were having a baby.
Yeah, that would be
That would be cooler. The gender reveal itself is not that interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because you already know you're having a baby.
Yeah.
But that would be the coolest if the wife's like, hey, let's go play some baseball out on the lawn. And the husband's like, oh, God, you're always trying to make me play baseball. Fine.
We'll go play.
And so he goes with her and she throws the ball and he swings.
Really the same.
And like that would be more interesting.
Yes, that is but, actually I like that. I like doing it as a pregnancy announcement.
Yeah.
And it would somehow. I mean, this is a Harry Potter trick. There's no way this could happen in real life. But like, if you hit the ball and it exploded into like confetti and then like a stork ribbon or something.
Yeah.
Like, we're having
or as a howler and it was the doctor shouting that you were pregnant.
At
yeah.
you.
Okay.
Okay, I now want, can you all listeners try to make it a thing to make a pregnancy announcement that you hit a baseball and it screams at you?
Yeah, we'll be in the A round of investing on that technology. Let's move on, though, from the baby gender reveal announcements. Let's talk to Chris, our beloved guest and coworker. Beloved, he is beloved. Both among us
friendly, funny,
and our
beloved.
Fans and beloved. You wrote a post this week ranking every single perfect game in Major League Baseball history. Now, granted, there are not that many.
Right.
But I think choosing between something that's called perfect, as you referenced in the post, is obviously difficult. So the first question I want to ask you, I guess before I get to that, you should go to MLB.com/cut4 and read this post so that you can vehemently disagree with Chris's rankings. But my first question to you is, what were your sort of generic criteria for making this list?
So a few things. One was exactly how dominant the pitching performance was, which was sort of difficult because obviously, by definition, every pitcher faced 27 batters and got them all out.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, things like number of strikeouts, how many pitches did it take for them to complete the whole game, how many three-ball counts did they face, stuff like that. You know, it's sort of a varying metric on just how great the pitching performance was. Two was, like, any sort of extenuating circumstances. Like, were there great defensive plays, like the Mark Burley perfect game with Dwayne Wise's catch against the center field wall bumped that game up a little bit in the rankings. So stuff like that, and also just how important it was in the story of baseball history. You know, did it have an impact? Did it involve a Hall of Famer or a legend or something like that? So those were sort of the three big ones, I would say.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite? Maybe not the best. Spoiler alert. The best was obviously Don Larsen's perfect game in the World Series. Just want to throw that out there. Do you have a favorite, though?
Three. Yeah.
One that is like maybe not the best or by that criteria, but one that sticks out in your mind?
The one that I ranked it pretty highly. I think he ended up ranking it fifth or sixth, but that I wasn't really aware of before I started writing the post, just because it's so old, was Cy Young's perfect game, which I think he threw in 1904. And the backstory was that at the time, Cy Young and Rube Waddell were probably the two best pitchers in Major League Baseball, certainly the two best pitchers in the American League, and they had developed this really sort of acrimonious rivalry. They just didn't like each other very much. Mm-hmm. And so at the beginning of the 1904 season, Rube Waddell had faced Cy Young's Boston Americans twice and beat them twice, including a one-hitter in early May. And so after the game, he took to the press and challenged Cy Young openly and said, you know, pitch against me again and that's going to happen again. And so lo and behold, a few days later, Cy Young and Rube Waddell faced off, and Cy Young not only responded by throwing a perfect game, but Rube Waddell was the last out of the perfect game, and after retiring Rube Waddell, Cy Young responded with the all-time one-liner, "How do you like that, you hayseed?" Which is admittedly old-timey, but I also thought was a pretty good burn.
That's amazing.
That'd be a really good t-shirt.
I would wear that shirt.
Yeah,
I think that should be the official Cut 4 motto, personally.
How do you like that, you hayseed?
Whenever we distribute any kind of post, we
I'm going to say that.
With, how do you like that, you hayseed?
At the annual Cut 4 softball game, I will say that as I charge you on the mound, Chris. fake charge.
That's like, remember a couple episodes, Claire decided he was going to sign all of his tweets with, "There you go."
Yes, I do remember.
Sanders,
that.
If you tweeted, you would have to sign them all. How do you like that, you hayseed?
Yeah, every single one.
Yes, every single one.
Gemma, what was your favorite perfect game?
I get sad when I think about perfect games.
Why?
Because I'm a Tigers fan.
Oh, Armando
Galarraga. Yeah, I my heart really wanted to just include Armando Galarraga on the rankings anyway.
Yeah.
At a
you
protest.
You should have.
That does make me sad. I think about that all the time.
I think about it at least once a week, and I just get kind of sad. That's just how I feel. That's how it is. And then everyone's like, "Oh, look at pictures of Armando Galarraga." Like, his arm around the ump. I'm like, "Oh, I know. Everyone was gracious and cool about it, but it still makes me so sad."
Remember when they wrote a book called "Nobody's Perfect"?
What's your favorite perfect game now that you made me think about this?
Obviously, the Mark Burley perfect game.
Oh, the Mark Burley perfect game.
Yeah, Mark Burley's very good.
I remember everything about that game. I remember, like, gathering around a computer to listen to the radio feed of it because, like, we couldn't find it somehow, me and my family. I remember the Dwayne Wise catch and just screaming. I remember the single most iconic call in baseball history. Alexei,
yeah, I feel like without Hawk Harrelson, that game is nowhere near as memorable.
That's the best part. It's easily the best part. There was like a blog post that went viral the next day of dudes who had like just lost their job, and they were looking for something to do, and so they randomly bought these cheap White Sox tickets to go to the game, and they were like, "What? How did we end up seeing this perfect game?" Everything about it was extremely cool. Mark Burley's extremely cool. And then in his next start, he was perfect through like 12 batters or something.
That's just ridiculous. Yeah.
That's my favorite.
That's a good one. That's a really good pick.
Yeah, that was also the year the Rays got no hit like three times in a calendar
year. Yeah, I think it was like four times over 2 years.
That was good. That was a lot of fun. Anyway, you should go to MLB.com/cut4 to read the entirety of Mr. Lander's post.
It's really
very,
good.
Very good.
It's
post.
Really good.
If you like history of the game at all, you should definitely go read it. And there'll be some in there you forgot. Like Dallas Braden's perfect game, I've forgotten.
Oh, yeah.
Even though it was very sweet.
Yeah, it was such a cool story.
Yeah, so go read that.
And write Lander's a letter in the mail, because you basically can't reach him on the internet, so mail him.
That's true. I'm off the grid, so send me some very
strong. It's like in Harry Potter with
mail.
Owl Post. If you just address it to Chris Lander's, it'll find him.
This is also this is also a Harry
just
Potter.
Just include Howard
Everybody
Thielen
knows this
podcast.
Is a Harry Potter podcast.
All right, let us move on here, and it is now time to summarize our podcast into 140 characters. One tweet that accurately and adequately condenses our podcast into one bite-sized chunk. Chris, because I've been so nice to you this entire podcast, you have to go first. What have you got?
All right, let's see. rest in peace, Carlos Beltran's glove. Maybe you will be resurrected for the next baby George Springer. Hashtag, how do you like that, you hayseed?
That's good. That
See,
a good tweet.
That's good. And now,
you should come back to Twitter.
Yeah, that's every tweet you ever tweet now. That's just how it has to go.
Okay, Gemma, what is your tweet?
I think it's just going to be really, it's just going to be really personal.
Okay.
It's going to be at Tori Hunter. Please play catch with me so I don't have to bury my major league dreams.
That's, wow, that's intense.
It's like a hard left turn.
Yeah, I would block you if I was him. That'd freak me out.
Well, I think that's not even his Twitter handle, so thank God. It'll just be at some random guy named Tori Hunter.
I have one that I think you'll like.
No, I probably won't.
I think
you're
like
making
this
the
one.
Face where you say, hey, do you want to see something that you're going to love and then I hate it?
And it ends up being the Ortiz Grand Slam with Tori Hunter falling over the wall.
That's this Rick Cup has
that's not what
Rick
this
rolling.
Is.
That's how
this
Dakota
is gonna
rolls
be,
me.
This is going to be one you like.
Is it?
Yes. Okay. It's going to be brackets, like an action, and it's like Dakota swings the bat and a baseball explodes, close bracket, baseball, colon, open quotation, Armando Galarraga pitched a perfect game, !! close quotation mark.
Yes, I do like this.
This is going
this
to be Twitter's
best
meme,
tweet.
Where everyone confesses unpopular opinions within an exploding baseball.
Yes.
Thank you.
This is the best tweet in the history of your time on the Cup Forecast.
That
I would retweet
good.
It.
Well
I would try to make it go viral. I would try to make that a Twitter meme where people could just do that. Like it's one of the, you know, like 8 Twitter joke forms is now the exploding baseball. Yes. Good job.
Yeah, we're going to make it happen.
Yes.
Thank you all.
I genuinely finally like something you've tweeted.
Thank you. Thank you very much. In lieu of Twitter.
Compliment in the history of backhanded compliments.
In lieu of Twitter likes, you can just hand me cash. That is acceptable as well. You can go to MLB.com/cut4 to read all the articles we talked about today and many, many more. You can like us on Facebook, facebook.com/cut4, and then we will appear in your newsfeed on Mark Zuckerberg's whims. You can follow us on Twitter @cut4. If you have any questions for us, you can email us cut4cast@mlb.com. That's cut, the number 4, cast, @mlb.com. I do have a tweet I would like to read. This one comes to us from Lisa P. Shout out to Lisa P. @lpuddles. She says, can we have a full week of Cut Forecast for the 2018 ASG? Way too many gems for Dakota and Gemma to conquer. Hashtag Game of Thrones in one episode. I agree. Ian's our boss. Ian, his Twitter account is @ENK_. So tweet him that very same thing. And maybe we will have a week of podcasts next week. This is a podcast. You can go to iTunes and you can subscribe to this podcast there. While you are there, you can leave us a rating, 1 to 5 stars. You can write a review. Please do that. It helps other people find the show if you liked the show. Gemma, if you didn't like the show, tell your enemies to come and listen to our podcast. Chris, as always, thanks you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Gemma, thank you for putting up with me.
Of course.
But mostly, thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week.